Hey, this is Hal Hester. I'm the pastor of Vineyard Christian Church, and this is our podcast. I want to thank you for joining us today. I hope this message inspires you, builds your faith, and gives you perspective on how God is moving in your life. Please enjoy the message.
Good morning. Hey, the storm still rages. Life is still difficult. Things still happen to us. In the midst of that, we are called to be the people of God, to live consistently with His Word and in step with His Holy Spirit. And so the storm rages around us. I don't know about you, but one of the biggest storms sometimes in my life can be the things that people say and do around us. And one of those, you know, when I was a kid, I was given the magic incantation. You know the magic incantation? Sticks and stones may break my bones, but they lied to you too. Didn't they though? I mean, we've been told all of our lives that those words don't hurt, but the truth is that words have great impact on us. They affect the way we feel about ourselves. Even though we tell ourselves we're not going to let those things get to us, it plays over and over again in the recording of our mind. We have a way of letting those things infect our spirit, infect our view of ourselves. Oftentimes I meet adults who are more controlled by things that were said to them as kids than anything else, or even things that happened to them in their young adult years. I've discovered even the power of my words as a parent of adult children now, where I thought that they weren't listening, and it turns out that they were. And those things really have an effect on them, sometimes for good, sometimes for less than good. And so I've struggled with those things. I know that you have too. You know, when I was a kid, I discovered that, you know, sometimes whenever I would repeat that refrain in hopes that it would make something stop, whether someone was teasing me, harassing me, they lied about something I said or whatever else, I just thought certainly if I just said those things that they would feel dumb and stop or whatever else, I would say the magic incantation and it would go away. And when it didn't, I remember thinking to myself, you know, I wish this kid would just hit me so I could hit them back. You know, because the rule when I was in school, it's not that way anymore, but when I was in school, you know, like, you didn't get in trouble if they hit you first. They got in trouble for hitting you first. And so I would think to myself, gee, if that kid would just hit me, I could pummel them into silence. You know, I mean, that would be they would end my frustration and I could let go of this thing and drop it or whatever. And then, you know, later on when I was a teenager, we moved from El Paso, Texas, big metropolitan city in the Southwest on the Mexican border, you know, and we moved to Midland, Texas, this small, well, it wasn't small, you know, really. It was bigger than Spring Hill, but it seemed small to me coming from El Paso, Texas, and we moved into a new town, and then people were, like, saying things. I didn't dress the same way and didn't act the same way, and so I was, you know, starting all my whole first semester, I spent almost every day in the principal's office, vice principal's office. Principal liked me. But anyhow, and I kept thinking, and part of the problem was, you see, I knew when I moved there that the rules had changed, and so I didn't have to wait for them to be silent, because we were like being all, you know, starting to kind of that whole PC thing, and I was like, oh, all I have to do is go ahead and hit them. That shuts them up. And so I thought that was the way to settle things, and lo and behold, it didn't work that way at all. It didn't shut people up. It just actually aggravated life more, all the more. And to be honest, here's the thing, is that at 13 years old, although I thought that that violence would solve the solution, it actually just continued to exasperate the problem. Didn't fix anything at all. But you know, when we look in the Bible, we discover that over and over again, the Word paints this picture that words are powerful. Words are powerful not just simply because they affect our feelings, so the way that we respond to people. Words are powerful not only because sometimes they incite us, and then we choose to act in ways that are sometimes less than becoming. But words are powerful because of the very nature of they bring blessing and cursing, the Bible says. Blessings and cursings. They can build people up. They can speak blessings of God over people. They can also curse people's lives and bring hardship and hurt into their lives. It goes way beyond feelings. Words have real power. In fact, in the Bible, in the very first chapters, we have God who speaks everything to existence, including light. Now, light is made of photons, but did you know smaller still are the particles of sound called phonons? Something to ponder. whenever you have plenty of, like, you're trying to go to sleep at night or something. Anyhow, but it is a little mind-blowing if you think about it for a little bit. But words are powerful. Words shape ideas. Words convey powerful emotions, including words like, I love you, as well as, I hate you. When we come up with trite sayings, like words can never hurt me, not only does it not solve anything, but it leads us to a misconception about our words and the power of words. Those conceptions don't stop bullies, and it ignores the real power that those words do have over our life. Now, in the midst of a church that was fleeing persecution, remember that we're talking about when the letter of James was being written, that we're talking in the very earliest days of the church, and the church in Jerusalem, the Jewish Christians, there were no Gentile Christians at that point. These early Christians have now fled from their loved ones, from their family, from their nation, from their people, and are dispersed out among the nations. James is writing a letter to them talking about real practical Christianity, walking out their faith in a time where they're under great duress, where they're in great chaos, when they have every reason to be anxious. I just think about yourself. When you are in times of great duress, when things are going hard, isn't that one of the hardest times to keep a rein on your tongue? I mean, isn't it what happens is that we have difficulties at work or something else like that, and then we come home and we unload on our spouse, or we unload on our kids, or we unload on the dog or the cat or whatever else, because we've been trying to be nice to everyone out around us, but in truth is that deep inside those things are still working on us. So among his many instructions of how to walk out really practical faith day by day, he talks about taming the tongue. And pointedly to these people who are under duress and stress, and he doesn't cut them any slack. Instead, he seems to double down on the importance of it, but not with legalistic harshness, but with the profound conviction of this, that the best time to work on these things is not sometime or someday when it is easier, but actually right now in the midst of the storms of life. That's what we're called to today. Let's take a look. James chapter 3. I'm going to be beginning there in verse 1. I'll be reading from the English Standard Version. Please follow along in whatever translation you have. The one in your lap is, of course, my favorite. If you're looking at it on an electronic device, if you'd set that to silent for the comfort of those around you and for your ability to pay attention, that'd be wonderful. And we'll take a look. James chapter 3, beginning verse 1. Not many of you should become teachers, my brothers, for you know that we who teach will be judged with greater strictness. For we all stumble in many ways. And if anyone does not stumble in what he says, he's a perfect man, able also to bridle his whole body. If he puts bits into the mouth of horses so that they obey us, we guide their whole bodies as well. Look at ships also. Though they are large and driven by strong winds, they are guided by a very small rudder, whatever the will the pilot directs. So the tongue is a small member, yet it boasts of great things. How great a forest is set ablaze by such a small fire. And the tongue is a fire, a world of unrighteousness. The tongue is set among our members, staining the whole body, setting on fire the entire course of life, set on fire by hell. For every kind of beast and bird and reptile and sea creature can be tamed and has been tamed by mankind. But no human being can tame the tongue. It is a restless evil, full of deadly poison. With it we bless our Lord and Father, and with it we curse people who were made in his image. From the same mouth come blessings and cursings. My brothers, these things ought not be. Does a spring bring forth from the same opening both fresh and salt water? Can a fig tree, my brothers, bear olives, or a grapevine produce figs? Neither can a salt pond yield fresh water. Blessed be the reading of God's holy word. Now, you know, right with the beginning of the passage, most people, when they get into chapter 3, just really like just that first part where it says, be not many of you teachers. you know? And the reason is, supposedly, now I looked for a research on this on, you know, the internet and every place else, and I couldn't find any actual studies that said this. But supposedly, because I've heard this all my life, and of course, if you repeat something often enough, that means it's true, right? I mean, like, that's the whole internet's built on that premise. But anyhow, nonetheless, we have this idea that if we say something often enough, it's true. And what I hear is that the most terrible thing for most people is the idea of having to do any public speaking, not just even like in a small, you know, in a large setting like this, but even in a in their classroom, or, you know, if they have to stand in front and they just rather take the F, you know, or something like that. You know, people just have a tendency to kind of freak out on that. And so supposedly most people are just really at peace with this idea of, gosh, I don't want to be a teacher. However, it has not stopped most people from trying to be an expert. You know what the difference is between an expert and a teacher, right? The teacher is actually invited to share their opinion. The expert is the one who shares their opinion, whether anybody wants to hear it or not. Anybody here an expert? No, I'm not going to ask that question. Never mind. And the particularly infuriating to those of us who do know everything. No, I'm kidding. But experts are rarely challenged simply because no one takes them serious. But in the role of teacher, it's an honored tradition, especially in the early church. Understand that, again, this is a church that has come out of the early Jewish Christians. And in that case, a big part of their worship and their relationship is through what we call the synagogue. Now, the rule of the synagogue was created during the Babylonian period when the Jews were in exile in Babylon, and they were trying to figure out a way to get together and to worship and to study the Bible and things like that. And so they made this rule that they would, if you had at least 10 families that then could support a teacher, a rabbi, that's what the word rabbi means, a teacher, then you could pay someone, and that they would spend all of their time taking care of that community who was living in exile, pastoring them, taking care of them in the spiritual sense, but also taking care of them in a relational kind of sense. Now, when we talk about in the first century church, the thing that was most common is that they didn't have a lot of church buildings. We know that there were some church buildings by late in the first century. But at this point, when we look at the picture of elders and pastors, things like that, in Timothy and Titus, it paints this picture of their household needing to be a safe place for the church to worship, because the most common place where they would worship then was in the household of the pastor. And so part of the admonition there, that he makes sure that his family was a particular way, that he was full of believers and things like that, was to make sure that the environment was safe, that you didn't want somebody in the household who had a vendetta against the leader or a vendetta against the church and then would smoke the church out, that was meeting in secret, essentially Christianity being illegal. Remember, this people are fleeing persecution. And so it was very important that that house be a safe place. So we have this environment where the teacher, the rabbi, the person who has this great influence in this community of faith, but not only as a teacher, but as kind of like a father to a household of faith, to make sure and take care of them, to watch over them, to protect them. It was very important, and it was a very significant role in the life of that of the church. And so as they're looking at all these things, James says to them, listen, it's important that not many of you would be teachers and that you can incur a stricter judgment. See, what he wasn't saying is he wasn't saying don't aspire to be a teacher. He wasn't saying don't have a desire to walk in that kind of level of understanding. He's not saying to them, don't disciple people around you, because in fact, the early church that James was first pastoring was best known for the way that they shared the gospel one with another. In fact, the church was over 10,000 in attendance before they even appointed deacons. So everybody was kind of taking care of one another and teaching and things like that. But the significant role of the teacher in that position was one who would influence a large group of people, who would set the course of their lives. They're protecting them, teaching them, guiding them with wisdom, things like that. And he says, you know, here's the deal, is that in that role, that those persons have a lot of influence, and because they have a lot of influence, then they also have a great responsibility. In fact, if you look in the Old Testament, one of the things that you'll note about the religious leaders and all the leaders of the people of Israel is that they were always held to a higher standard. In our society and culture, we've debated whether or not that should be right when it comes to sports figures and movie stars and presidents and everything else. And the reason that we have had that debate actually comes from the Bible. It's part of our old biblical heritage that was so much a part of the early formation of the United States of America and is less and less commonly understood. But the primary reason that we believe that people in authority should be held to a higher standard comes from this biblical idea of the pastor-teacher. So in that understanding, they said, listen, they are held to a higher judgment in the Old Testament specifically. If the thing that a person had to offer for the sacrifice of their sins was a goat, then the leaders had to offer a bull. If they had to offer one bull, then the leaders had to offer two. There was this sense in which there was this greater accountability. It was more expensive. It was costly. And the idea was is that the role that they have and the kind of influence they have is costly. It's costly because it can negatively impact people. It's costly because it can positively affect people. But ultimately, the idea was that you were held to a higher standard of conduct and code and the things that you say. And the reality is that I have discovered over the years is that being in this role, you know, when I was a young pastor, I used to get me so upset. Like, what do you mean? Like, why do they get to grade everything I say and every illustration I use and every, and I used to think, man, this is not fair. I'm just like everybody else. But the reality is the longer I'm in ministry, you know, in some 30 years of ministry, I found out that my words have an incredible amount of weight in people's lives. Such to the point that I've even, like, become to really, like, question myself when I say simple things about things I like or want or I think would be a good idea. Like, a lot of times I will just completely dismiss those things right after I say them simply because I've seen people go to great lengths to fulfill my wishes or my heart's desire just out of respect and honor for me. And I'm like, no. I didn't mean to imply that you needed to do my bidding. See, the focus needs to be on Christ. And so I have this sense of responsibility before the flock that this is really important. You know, you might be saying to yourself, well, Pastor Hal, that's really good, and I see why that should be in, but why would you, like, I mean, we're going through the book of James, and it wouldn't have been easier just to teach on taming our tongue and talk to everybody in the room about taming their tongue because we all need to learn to tame our tongue. Absolutely. And all those things are true. But I've got to say to you that, you know, in being integrist with the text, part of being responsible for what you say is being integrist with the text. And really, the primary focus here is actually on the role of the pastor. That's why he uses those illustrations. It's a powerful illustration of the idea of that a spark that sets an entire forest on fire. Anybody here grow up on Smokey the Bear? When I was a kid, we had Smokey the Bear. Only you can prevent forest fires. I was always intrigued because we'd go in my backyard, gasoline and hand grenades, and couldn't get a fire started, you know? I mean, like, you're trying to start the barbecue, you poured out the whole thing, and the coals are just still not hot. And yet there's people like throw a cigarette out, like in California, and we've got all these problems with these, you know, forest fires and stuff like that, and we go, wow, this is a real deal. Like, things like that actually do happen. There really are things that happen. But listen, a small spark starts a huge raging fire like that that's happening out in California right now. The truth is that even if you look at our incredibly huge ships that we have today, I mean, he's talking about ships that were powered by sails, but we have ships the size of cities now. They're nuclear powered. They can be at sea for years. They could just eat. Can't eat nuclear power, but yet. Star Trek says eventually, but anyhow. But the reality is those great big ships, they're the size of cities, are steered by a relatively small rudder. Now, I guarantee if you stand next to that rudder, you're going to go, it doesn't look so small. But in comparison to the ship, it's tiny. You see, the reality is that as pastor, teacher, or anyone else who ends up in leadership or authority in a church, that one small piece in the body can have a huge effect on the entire congregation and set people's lives in directions that sometimes are healthy and sometimes that aren't. That can change people's expectations about who God is or even the way that we relate to one another. And so it's really important, I think, not only for me to be accountable to that text in private, but also to be accountable to you in a very public way about that and just simply say, you know, it's something that I'm continually working on and growing in my relationship with Christ. But it's really true. There is a stricter judgment for those who would teach. Now, I would say that to people who might have a yearning or a desire. They think to themselves, I would like to be a pastor. I think I would like to be in that role. Is that don't let that discourage you. Let it inform you of that you need to make sure that your life is in order. When I was in Bible college, one of the things I got to do was one of my last assignments in Bible college before going to seminary was I got to interview a whole bunch of my professors and some pastors and all on what was the most important thing that they would give advice-wise to a young pastor going into ministry for the first time. And I got all kinds of great advice about different things, but the one interview that stood out most to me was an interview with a man by the name of Carol Osborne. A very famous Greek scholar, and I was really thinking with him I would get the least amount of like pastoral advice. It would be something like doctrinal or something like that, because I'd been to all these other people who taught pastoral ministry stuff as their primary focus. And yet the most profound thing said about ministry was by Carol Osborne when he said to me, make sure that you are emotionally healthy before you go into ministry. He says, you know, one of the things that a lot of people do, he says, they see you on the stage and they see people vying for your attention. And what they're going to think is that the way to get popular or the way to fix my social problems is I become a pastor. No. Can I just tell you that as much as this is, I tell you what, I've never felt more loved by a congregation than this congregation. I truly mean that. But, you know, the reality is that you're going to say things that sometimes are going to hurt someone's feelings or going to put you in a difficult spot with somebody, and there are going to be people that are going to misunderstand what you meant or whatever else. And if you're looking at it as a way to bolster your own self-esteem, it's a bad idea. And what often happens, listen, whenever I was in Bible college, the majority of people that I graduated with within 3 years left the ministry because they hadn't satisfied those issues in their life before they got into ministry. And so when the hardships and the difficulty of actually doing life together with other people and people scrutinizing your words and the things you do and say was just too much. Now, there are many others that had to leave ministry for different reasons in the course of their life or whatever else. I'm not saying that everybody that leaves ministry needs to settle those issues, but I can just tell you that too often he was true to his word that one of the most important things you could do was get satisfied with knowing who you were before God and taking care of those things so that you could be the teacher of the flock and be responsible for those who hear your words and what you say and do to be judged. Really important. Now, as we talk about all those things, listen, here's the thing, is that even as those warnings really are to pastors and teachers, so because it affects so many people, the flip side of it is that you really do have a powerful tongue as well. And one of the things that I think is so important as he writes this is that he's writing it to those people who are in duress and in a difficult time. Now, you know, the Bible's really clear. It doesn't say that anger is sin. It says that in your anger, do not sin. I don't know about you, but have you realized that it's in the midst of your anger that it's the easiest moment to sin? That's why the Bible says those things. See, it's trying to give us the heads up when things happen. And what do we, this is, I know you've never said this. Well, they got me so angry, I couldn't help myself. As if it's their responsibility for your behavior. Now, I know what they mean, because I've been provoked, but it really is in that moment where I find out the depth of my faith. Hello? See, whenever people are being nice, it's easy to be nice. If you say, well, I can control my tongue as long as nobody makes me mad, then you don't have control of your tongue. I mean, everybody else does that too, right? I mean, people just typically don't say disparaging, harsh, and cruel things. Now, I know you know a few, but let's be honest, that's not the way people generally function and relate to people in life. Everybody can control their tongue when you're not under duress. But here he's speaking to people who are in the midst of the greatest duress, and he doesn't cut them slack because he's saying, look, this really impacts people. This is going to impact the way that the kingdom of God advances across the nations, because those Jews were going out and taking the gospel to the ends of the earth, to the people who had never heard of Jesus Christ, never heard of the hope of Messiah, never been received the promise of the words of Jesus. He says, it's in that place that it's really important for you and I to control our tongues and the way, the things that we say, the things that we do. And you know, we might even like kind of relate that back even down to in a digital age. Sometimes our words are not necessarily the things that come from our tongue, but trickle across our fingers on our social media, right? And those things have power. So we meet people. Maybe you know what it's like, where they're still functioning out of things that were said to them when they were younger. Baggage that they're carrying around because of things that were said to them. Maybe by a parent. Maybe by a teacher. Maybe even by a friend. Or at least someone they thought was a friend. I can remember some things that a teacher said to me one time. One of my professors, it was absolutely wounding. It carried around for just a couple of years in my spirit, just trying to prove that that wasn't true. And one day I kind of came to the point where I realized that, like, I was letting him take up rent in my head, and I was actually doing the opposite of what I wanted to do. That I really was behaving badly in those things in trying to prove that what he said wasn't true. It had a lot of control over my life, and one of the best things I did was to just let it go, to forgive him, to let it pass. He says, listen, look, here's the deal. When you look at all of creation, it's amazing the things that mankind, you know, we are created in the image of God. If his words can speak light into existence, your words can bring blessings and cursings. That's what the scripture says. You look at, remember when it used to, I don't know, it's maybe if it's, you know, not okay with you now, it used to be PC, it's not PC, you know, SeaWorld. Remember when the little woman, 5'2", eyes of blue, would climb up a ladder, stick a fish in her mouth and hang out over a pool of water, and the great big orca would jump up and then snap her head off? Oh, no. He would snatch the fish out of her mouth, fall back down into the water. She would climb back down the ladder, walk over to the side of the pool, and it would roll over and go, oh, pat my belly. It's a killer whale. It could have just snapped her head off, right? Remember going to the circus as a kid and seeing the lions, and the guy would open the lion's mouth and stick his head in there and pet it. Nice kitty. You know, there's no end to the presence and the reflection of the character of God. And then he says specifically, there's nothing that we haven't tamed except this one thing, the tongue. Out of it flows blessings and cursings. I mean, have you thought about this morning? You were singing praises to God. But you know how easy it is for us to sing praises to God and then turn and say, did you see what she was wearing on stage? Really? That's what you want to do? You just sang praises to God and you just ripped into one of his servants on stage because you didn't like what they were wearing? Did you see that? He was wearing flip-flops. That can't be the presence of God. They were drinking coffee in church. That surely can't be the presence of God. With the same mouth, we praise God and wound those who were created in his image. You know what? It's not just what things that we do in church and things like that. It's how we represent Christ to our community and the things that we say to the people that are around us. He it's just really, really significant what you and I say. See, while it's obvious in that one sense of for me as a pastor that I need to be careful in what I say, let me tell you, in just the less obvious, it really does matter what you say. And look, you don't even have to be the teacher or a recognized person, just simply because you go to church. And we live in a less and less Christian society where the view of who you are becomes the view of what Christianity is about. And what they really want to know is, how does your Christianity affect you? How does it change your life? What flows out of your mouth? Is it living water or salt water? Okay. It's a great illustration, right? Just being salty or not being salty. And the things that we say and how we bring life to people. Whether we speak blessings over people's lives. I see that gift that you have. I see that ability you have, and I bless that in you. You don't have to be even religious about it and say, you can just say, man, that's really great. All those talents you have, that is wonderful. You're a great guitarist. You're great with numbers. You're brilliant. You're smart. You're beautiful. You're intelligent. Bless, not curse. It really is our responsibility. And here's the thing, is that whole thing of taming the tongue really does represent what people think about Christianity. See, here's the reality. You and I, we've decided to follow Christ and to become more Christ-like. And so when we gather here together, the primary goal of the teacher is to try and instruct you and I so that we walk and act and look more like Jesus. But the primary goal here isn't to draw people into this place to try to convince them to become Christians. Because the reality is that when you go talk to your neighbor and you say, well, you just don't know, our church is completely different. Our pastor is cool. He drinks coffee. He eats hot, spicy food and stuff like that. You know, we wear blue jeans. I mean, you know, and we have, you know, cool modern music and stuff. And they go, no, thank you. And we go, why? You know, you don't understand. Our church is like, it's different than what you think it is. Anybody here play chess? Couple of people. You know, it's like inviting people to chess club. I don't care how cool your chess club is. When you go to over your friend, you go, hey, you should come to our chess club. And the guy says, I don't play chess. No, you don't understand. Our chess playing team leader, the guy that sets up the thing, man, he is the coolest chess player that there is. And he like wears blue jeans when he plays chess and drinks coffee. It's really good. And we have like great songs about playing chess and stuff. We sing these songs and we meet like, you know, first thing in the morning on like Sunday morning, you know, when you want to sleep in, why don't you come and play chess with all of us? And they're like, dude, I just told you. I don't play chess. I don't want to play chess. I have no interest in playing chess. Leave me alone. I don't play chess. And we go, no. You don't understand. If you come to our chess club, it'll completely change your view of chess. That's kind of like inviting people to church. Let me tell you how that we make an impact. That as I teach and we grow together and we become more and more reflective of the image of Christ. When they hear the things that you say and you speak life into their life, it infects people. And so that they go, you know what? I don't know what it is in your life or why you conduct yourself the way that you do, but I want that. That's what I want. Well, that goes along with playing chess. Now I'm interested in playing chess. Not because I want to play chess, not because it sounds intriguing to me, but simply because if that does that, I want that. I want the peace that passes understanding. I want my life to be transformed. I want to be able to bridle my tongue in the midst of the situation where I thought you would have unleashed 1,000 torrents and just skinned that guy alive, and instead you spoke blessings and not cursing. Because you were a person of peace when you could have been a person of war. It's transformative. But can I just tell you that the goal here isn't to get more people in this room. The goal is for you and I to be more and more like Jesus. That's what the word Christian means. Little Christ. And so what we're asking to do when we come to Christianity is not just to get saved, not just to check the boxes. We don't bridle our tongue because it's the right thing to do, or it's a good thing to do, or it's a moral thing to do, or it's the religious thing to do. It's because we think to ourselves, what would Jesus do in that? And then we want to imitate that. We want to be like him. We want our speech to be like Jesus' speech. We want our lives to be transformed in the image of Christ. And so then the things that we speak, out of our mouths come the words of Jesus, the kindness, the mercy, the hope, the direction, sometimes correction. But out of our mouths flow Jesus. But if the goal is just to fill a room with a bunch more people who are unhappy, checking boxes, not walking with Jesus, being religious, being intolerant, being quick-witted and sharp-tongued, oh, please, let's just shut the doors. But if our goal is to be transformed into the image of Jesus, listen, nothing in all of creation functions outside of that. Salt, fresh springs of water do not spew salt water unless something's wrong. Fig trees do not produce olive trees. And how can the tongue produce blessings and cursings? Yours and mine. It really matters that we control our tongues for the sake of the kingdom, for the sake of extending grace and mercy and hope to people, but not out of some kind of religious sense of order, not out of being able to control one another or anything else, but rather that sense of like, hey, I want that. Now, this morning, before we wrap up, we're going to do some baptisms this morning, and they're going to open up the tub back over here. We're going to put the baptisms up on the screen so that you can see them. And then after we do some baptisms, I'll just want to offer the opportunity for people to come up and get some prayer and ministry this morning. But before we go to those baptisms, let me just say this. You know, oftentimes we sit and we listen to teaching and we think to ourselves, what does that have to do with my life? And it would be really easy to say, especially this one, well, you know, Pastor, that was all about you as a pastor and things like that. But really, that whole issue of controlling the tongue is huge in the lives of believers, regardless of your maturity level, regardless of how long you've been walking with Jesus or anything else. And so if that's you this morning, you know, we can do a number of things. One is you could just simply turn to the person next to you and say, would you pray with me about this issue? I just need some real accountability in my own life. And look, accountability, the primary purpose of accountability is not to beat one another up. It's to help each other grow up. Okay? But secondly, there's some people here that, you know, maybe you have been wounded in a church by what another pastor or church leader or a member of that church did. And one of the things that I recognize that happens a lot in ministry is that I'm cashing checks that some other pastor wrote. What I mean by that is this, that someone hurts you, wounds you, and leaves a mark on your spirit, on your heart. And then later on, things I say, things I do, things I'm teaching get heard through the filter of what the other person did, and then it gets taken out on me as if I did those things and said those things. Can I just tell you one, you know, it, not only is that very difficult because you don't know where it's coming from, but secondly, and really more importantly, the damage to your heart that you're carrying that stuff around, it's just bad for you spiritually. You may need to just simply find a way to forgive that person. Maybe that you can go to them. Maybe that you can tell them what happened. Maybe they're unwilling to hear and you just simply need to forgive them so that you can move on. I mean, it's like, you know, unforgiveness is like drinking poison and waiting for the other person to die. And so that might be affecting your relationship. And so this morning, we'll have the prayer teams up here. And maybe this morning, you just, as you let that kind of sink in, you'd come to a point where you'd say, what I really want to do is I want to get some prayer for that so I can get that release in my life and no longer have that thing writing checks in my life that I don't want to cash. All right.
I hope you enjoyed the podcast today. And if you did, there's two things I'd love to ask of you. Number one, would you subscribe to our show? That way, the most recent podcast will be in your feed, ready for you when you are. And secondly, if this ministry has impacted you and you'd like to help us continue to reach others, you can click on the link in the description to give now.